Any team that's tested AI tools for data has seen the pattern already. AI gives a different number than your BI tool. Metrics don't match across teams. And inevitably, users lose trust. It turns out, turning on AI is easy, but making it work on data is not. Hex AI was built to solve this. The key is nailing context. Hex is built to unify and curate your data context for agents. Data teams can observe, govern, and continuously improve every AI answer, so answers get smarter the more your team asks. The result? Your entire organization asks data questions in natural language and trusts the answers. Not because the AI got lucky, because it knows your business and its data. Because that's what an AI analytics platform should do. Join data teams from Cursor, Lovable, Ramp, AWS, and over 2,000 more at hex.ai.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in here live on a Monday. We'll take you up until 10 o'clock today. Hand it off to Darren, Donick, and Chase. They are coming up in less than 1 hour, and right now we welcome in Darren McFarland of Darren, Donick, and Chase, and of course the Predators Radio Network. D-Mac, happy Monday. How you doing?
Happy Monday to you guys. How's everything going?
Everything is good. I mean, what do we have to complain about? 4-0 weekend, Titans, Vols, Preds, Nashville, SC. Everybody TSU did their job.
Much welcomed, isn't it?
It is. I said we talked Preds around 7:45 this morning, and I said win of the season so far against Tampa through 11 games. No Duchesne, no Forsberg. You're on your backup goaltender in Saturday's game with UC Soros. You got multiple power play goals. Would you agree? Game of the year so far, win of the year for the Preds?
I think what separates it from the win in Vegas is what you just said there at the very beginning. To not have 9 and 95, right? Duchesne and Forsberg are your best weapons on offense. And not to have them in the lineup and still beat a Tampa team that had a historic regular season. By the way, we always talk about the negative with can't explain, scratching our head. Why can't the Predators beat the Red Wings? Why can't they beat the Coyotes? Why do they have these struggles against these teams? It makes no sense. How about the fact that the Predators have just flat out owned Tampa? And Tampa's been really, really good, as we all know, in this window. That's the fourth straight win down there. They swept them last year in regular season. They may have been the only team to beat them twice in regulation last season. The Predators did that. So for whatever reason, they're probably scratching their head. Why do the Predators own us? Although it's two really good teams. But to your point, the Vegas win, in my mind, that was just the complete game they were looking for. That was a really good win. But you're right, without Forsberg, without Duchesne, and just the fashion to come back and win, Roman Josi to tie it up late in the game, and then Ryan Ellis to win it in overtime. Yeah, and two power play goals, essentially three power play goals, because in overtime that power play had just expired. So it could have been three power play goals in the win in Tampa. So, yeah, I'd probably slide over to your side and agree that to this point, 11 games in, it's the best win of the year.
And I think in part because of how they played on defense, UC Soros, they played finally sort of a complete game in front of him. What did you make of the defense on Saturday night?
Well, it was very good, to your point, Braden. And they have actively talked about it. They talked about it again after the game. They know they have to be better. UC Soros and Pecorino, going back to the Predators against Tampa, it's impressive how those two goaltenders have been against the Lightning in their careers. Pekka's 9-0-1 in his career versus Tampa, and they didn't start him. Just think about that notion for a minute. And Pekka's just coming off a shutout on Thursday night. He's 9-0-1 against the team career-wise, and he didn't start. Well, UC Soros, after this, wins 2-0-1. Against Tampa. Neither one of these goaltenders have lost in regulation to the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, yes, the defense was good. I think it goes back to, a guy like Dante Fabbro, who is just every game you would hope and suspect, especially the way everybody talks about him, he's just going to get better game by game. And, they were more responsible in front of him, and it paid off.
D-Mac, earlier this morning, I professed my love on the air for Dan Lambert. I am officially, he's officially man crush material when you've got the power play playing the way it is right now, 22%. I know it's only 14th in the NHL, but compared to last year, I will take that every single day of the week and twice on Sunday. I guess sometimes, you know, it just comes down to a different set of eyes, a different voice. I mean, I know, you know, from a schematic standpoint, they want to move the puck more. They want to get pucks on net. And there's certainly a different approach to the power play this year. But can you speak a little bit on Dan Lambert? Was it just simply a different voice in that dressing room?
Nick, what does that entail, you having a man crush on somebody? Is that like, do you have a poster now? What does that mean?
I can tell you, Darren. He sends tweets from the toilet.
I actually tweeted Dan Lambert from the bathroom this morning and said, "Thank you, sir."
Toilet tweeting.
May I have another?
I don't believe I've ever received a tweet from the toilet from Nick. So clearly, he does not have a man crush.
Not that you know of.
Yeah, you don't know that. He may have sent many. You don't know.
So do you confess that, hey, this tweet is from the toilet?
Like, yes, 100%. And as long as he keeps this at 22%, I'll tweet him from the toilet for the rest of the year.
This is why I love coming on with you guys on Mondays. I learn something new every week, and I just learned something new. To your question, I think the one thing that the reoccurring theme that I keep getting from the players is because they know, right? I'm not around Dan Lambert. You know, they're behind the walls around him day in and day out. They all say he's really positive. Positive reinforcement. I mean, Nick Bonino came up to Barrel House after I think it was Tuesday's game last week after the win and over Anaheim, and he told the story about how he had a rough go of it in the game prior to that, and Nick was down on himself, and Dan Lambert the next day at morning skate pulled him over, and you know it's what players expect, right? The coach is going to kind of say, you know what, kind of give it to him a little bit, like what happened there, and he said it was just the opposite, and Lambert was just build him up. And I mean, Nick Bonino's a veteran of the game. I mean, he's the guy who knows hockey and has been in very, very, a lot of important games over the years. And, you know, and he did just the opposite. And that rubs off on players. I mean, I'm sure DNA's can speak on that. Just it affects everybody differently. But I just keep getting the theme that he's constantly building up and just positive reinforcement. And then, of course, educating them with the tools. I mean, let's all be honest. With all of our eyes see that it looks different. It certainly feels different with the statistics, as you mentioned, up 17 spots from last year where they finished. They already have 9 power play goals, but we all can see that it's different. I mean, we've seen that he's already touched this power play and changed the mentality, changed kind of their approach. But I think a little bit behind the scenes, to peel the curtain, I keep getting that it's kind of the positive reinforcement from Dan Lambert that seems to be working as well.
And maybe that's what they needed, because we know Peter last year said he tried just about everything to get the power play going, and for some reason it didn't. But then you got an outside voice comes in, and lo and behold, this team go from last to middle of the pack. And I think that's a big accomplishment if it continues to bear out that way as the season goes on. You go from last to middle of the pack. I think that's a huge improvement in that one particular area of your team. Now, the Western Conference is central.
Real quick, Darren, isn't it like our kids, right? We've all, like, coached our kids. And at some point, like, if they've heard the same voice, like, there's times when you realize you need to step away and let somebody else, even if they're delivering basically essentially the same message, but it's just a different voice, it's someone different, it changes the message, doesn't it? I mean, I think
course.
That's kind of same thing. Really.
Of course. That's why it's so hard for people to coach their own kids, because after a while, the message to them, you know, becomes, you know, mute. But then that same message can come from someone else, and all of a sudden they hear it totally differently. So you may be right on that one as far as Lambert coming in and same message but a different voice. The Central, do you think this is going to turn out to be the toughest division in hockey? Right now, all the teams are pretty much bundled up, but it's that way throughout the NHL, period. But at the end, do you think the Central is going to be one of the toughest, if not the toughest?
There's no doubt about it. I mean, we've talked about this, unfortunately, for years. It's continued to be the toughest or one of the toughest in the league. Of course, you know, when you stack up Boston and Tampa and Toronto, that's a pretty nasty 1-2-3 punch as well over in the Eastern Conference. But, yeah, I mean, I think right now we can see that Minnesota probably is going to struggle this year. They don't look like they're a very good team. I don't really see them getting that turned around, which is not going to surprise anybody. Winnipeg is struggling. Elliot Friedman came on Thursday and said Dustin Byfuglien, maybe next month he returns. They clearly need him back. They don't look like the same team either. Doesn't mean that they're not a threat and you can throw them to the side of the curve. But, no, they don't look the same and it doesn't feel the same. But we know Colorado's good. We know the Predators are good. Dallas will get things going. And so, yeah, I mean, it's St. Louis is the defending Stanley Cup champ. So there's no doubt it's going to be another tough road. And I think everybody expected that. And, look, it's been a tough road and they've won back-to-back division titles. So they'll have their work cut out of it to win it again. But they're certainly capable of doing it, especially after what you guys just brought up. I think you can see, as we talked about, it's head-scratching when you lose the teams you should beat. But look at the wins that they have. Beating the Capitals, beating Vegas, beating the Sharks, beating Tampa, and two of those on the road. I mean, that to me is more impressive than head-scratching losses to the Coyotes and the Red Wings and teams like that, the Panthers, which, you know, I think the Panthers and Coyotes may be a little bit better than everybody thinks, but to me, that's what's more impressive. So they've already, through 11 games, shown that they stack up and make them play with the best in the league.
D-Mac, always a pleasure. We will see you in about 45 minutes.
Sounds good, guys. Always a pleasure.
You got it. Thank you. Darren McFarland coming up as a part of Darren, Donick, and Chase today at 10 o'clock here on 102.5 The Game. We will come back, open up the phones, 615-737-1025. If you want to jump back in on the Titans, the Vols, the Preds, Nashville SC, great weekend to be a Nashville sports fan. We'll get back into all of that coming up next here on Morning Drive.
It's a great time and an important time to get your house checked up right now before the weather gets super, super cold and all of a sudden, you know, your furnace, your heater, or whatever you've got warming your house is working overtime because the temperature starts to drop. That means you need to get your house checked out now. And Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, of course, are the great people you need to give a call. SpringHillAC.com is the website. Proud sponsor of Smashville Live. By the way, Ryan Johansson, Colton Sissons coming up this week. So Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, always a proud sponsor and proud to be a part of what the Nashville Predators are doing. And they're proud to be a part of your lifestyle, taking care of your home. Again, join the Comfort Club. You get two checkups per year, once in the spring and once in the fall, right now, so that before your house starts working overtime, when it gets really cold, everything is running smoothly. You want it all to be checked out. You want it all to be, the diagnostics need to be run so everything's running smoothly. It'll save you money. It'll create efficiency in your bill, so it'll save you money in the short term. But it also could protect from a long-term giant, you know, big repair that's unexpected. You know, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling is a great emergency plan, but they're also a great prevention plan. So Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, it's why my family's not using anybody else anymore. We're not using the other guys. We're only using Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Join the Comfort Club. They got great financing options, 2 decades of experience in Middle Tennessee. They've opened up a second office in Dixon there on Highway 100 south of Dixon so they can handle more customer base because you've rewarded them with your business for 20 years. So check them out, springhillac.com. springhillac.com is the website. Tell them Braden sent you. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Don't trust your home with anybody else.
9:18, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We will go around the NFL coming up at the bottom of the hour, the big finish at 9:45. Back to the Titans yesterday, Nissan Stadium. Before the game, our very own Derek Mason, along with Chris Johnson, honored as, what I guess we'll call it, dueling 12th men. Is that the best way to describe it?
6-6. He was 6. Half men.
How'd that go?
Half men.
Those both sound like insults.
Together,
we were the
12th man.
6-6 is like a bad college football team. And
so Jimmy Pruitt would kill for 6-6.
And you're only half a man. I feel like you've just insulted both yourself and
together,
Chris Johnson.
On offense, we won 6 games, and on defense, we won 6 games. So ultimately, we won 12. There you go.
There you go.
So what was it like yesterday?
Oh, it was cool. No, it was cool. You know, they honored really Chris Johnson for his 2000 season, that night, 2009 year.
Where Kevin Mawai, right, was the center?
Yeah, I think Kevin Mawai, they had a really good offensive line, you know, with the addition of Kevin Mawai. They had a really good offensive line that year. And he was one of only, four or five backs in NFL history that have rushed for 2,000 yards. It might have been more than that because you got not Walter Payton, but you got Barry Sanders that did it. OJ, Eric Dickerson, Jamal Lewis. Who else went over 2,000? There was another back in there.
Barry Sanders has gone over 2,000 twice. Adrian Peterson did it once.
So there's like a handful of back that have went over 2,000 yards. And he's one of those backs. So he will always, you know, go down in NFL history as
well. Did I miss one?
There's
Adrian Peterson, Barry Sanders,
there's
OJ
maybe
Simpson,
like seven backs that have won over 2,000 yards.
Chris Johnson,
Terrell Davis, and
Jamal Lewis. That's six at least.
Six. We might be missing one.
I think it's seven times. I think
Sean Alexander?
Barry did it twice.
No, Sean Alexander got 1,900.
Barry did it twice, I think.
Uh-huh.
Right?
I think Sean Alexander got the year he won MVP.
Tomlinson?
I don't think Thompson ever got to 2,000
yards. Well, Sean Alexander had like 27 or 28 touchdowns.
Alexander set the touchdown record that LT then came back.
But the year he won MVP, he rushed for like 1,800 yards, 1,900 yards.
Give me two seconds.
Did I hear this correctly, the way you phrased it? It was more about Chris Johnson than you?
I think it was, and I didn't mind
Do I need to get mad at the Titans about this?
No.
The all-time leading receiver, and you were like a throw-in?
And no, I don't think it. I think they
I'll blow
they
a sack if you need me to.
No. I think they wanted to make both of us, you know, they wanted to do it, but then they honored the 09 team with Chris Johnson rushing for 2,000 yards. I didn't take it as a slight to me. You know, it was – that's the first time I've been, you know – well, the second time. I've been able to be on the field with a 2,000-yard rusher, like on the same team, Jamal Lewis. But I wasn't there, but then I got a chance to play with them. And now, you know, Chris Johnson, we didn't play a game, but we walked on the field together.
So. We, of course, whiffed on the single-season all-time leading rusher in NFL history.
Walter Payton?
Eric Dickerson. So Eric Dickerson, number one all-time, 2,105 yards.
No, we didn't. I said Eric
Dickerson.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, okay, I said Eric Dickerson. Thank God one of us did. So Eric Dickerson, Adrian Peterson, number two, Jamal Lewis, number three, Barry Sanders, number four, Terrell Davis, five, Chris Johnson, six, O.J. Simpson, seven. Earl Campbell in 1980 for the Houston Oilers, of course, was like 65 yards short. Mm-hmm. How about this? Amon Green is number nine with Barry Sanders at 1,883 yards. And then Sean Alexander had 1,880.
Yeah, okay.
Right there. And then there's a bunch of, you know, Jim Brown, Tiki Barber, Ricky Williams, Walter Payton.
So he's in a
pretty rarefied
class.
Rarefied air.
You know, of backs that have rushed for 2,000 yards, because that's hard to do, especially in this league now where passing is a premium. It's hard to do. So kudos to Chris Johnson and, you know, kudos to the Titans for honoring him, allowing me to be the 12th man, but then honoring that 09 team. And the 2000 and the 1999 team, because it was 20 years that the team that 99 team went to the Super Bowl. So this 20 year anniversary.
So I asked you, I think this was Friday, Nick, when you were out, and I asked him. I said, "Do you think you could go out there and play quarterback for Alabama this week and beat Arkansas?" And mm-hmm. and you're literally within a half a second, you had like PTSD.
Oh yeah,
and you were like, "Oh my God, I got a headache!" Like immediately. Yeah. Is there still similar, like, what's your emotional reaction when you're on a field and you look up at a stadium full of people? There has to be part of you that misses sort of what comes along with being on the field as an NFL player. But is there any part of you that also remembers all the pain? Like, as you're standing out there at 46 years old and your body, you know, you've had multiple shoulder surgeries and knee issues and all kinds of stuff.
You know what? I don't, because I've been a weird guy when it comes to crowds and, you know, stuff like that. I really don't like crowds and a bunch of people in one space. Even in the stadium, when you're playing, you kind of block it all out. So it's just you and the team. It's just y'all.
But a lot of great memories, though.
Yeah, a lot of great memories. I mean, Titan fans were wonderful the years I was there. But, you know, I miss Monday through Friday. That's what I miss. You know, the games were the games. I mean, you go out there, you got a job to do. And
so you're like the anti-Allen Iverson.
Yeah.
Iverson hated practice, loved the games. You'd love the preparation and the process.
Exactly.
And Monday, Sunday was just like a bonus?
Because you knew in a game, you had to go out there and perform. And it was either win or lose.
More stressful?
Yes, stress. Sort of, yeah. And in practice, it was those moments where everybody could be themselves. And there was no cameras around. At least, you know, they were there for the first, you know, 20 minutes. But then they were gone. And it's just you and the fellas. And you just were able to be yourself. And you were able to just go out there and make each other better. So the games were the games. And we've had some great games. But the part that I did miss was the practice. But now, honestly, I don't miss none of it. I mean,
not even that adrenaline rush.
No, I don't. When I told you that last week, that is true. It is real serious. Yeah. When I watch the game, I think I told TD this too yesterday. I'm like, I don't know how I did it and why I did it. When I watch it now, I get a headache watching it, man, because it's like, why?
I get a headache watching Arthur Smith too.
It's great that what these guys are doing, and only a select few can do this at this level. But I watch it now,
dude. They're car accidents, man.
I don't know how I did it. That's the only time I truly get a headache.
Because you're an alpha male that loves competition. And the paycheck was pretty damn good. That's why you did it.
The paycheck was great. It was great. I mean,
listen,
that's why you do it. Can you get that type of money?
Right. Brett Kern was in a car accident yesterday.
Yeah.
Like that's what Devin White did to him. And it's not like, listen, that's an unusual circumstance, mm-hmm. but it happens every play for linebackers and offensive guards and running backs. And I can't remember which game I was watching on mm-hmm. Saturday night. I think it might have been, I don't think it was Notre Dame, Michigan, but I was watching football on Saturday night, and I'm just going, I don't know how quarterbacks don't have torn up knees and ankles on every game. I don't know how they do it. Like, the way you get twisted around, or maybe it was Joe Burrow. It was the LSU-Auburn game.
Uh-huh.
And Joe Burrow took a weird hit where, like,
Derek Brown
hit him in the knee, and then it came back a couple plays later and got twisted to the ground on a sack. And I'm going, I don't know how quarterbacks have two functioning legs at the end of any season in Power 5 football or the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I know they're more protected in the NFL, but I just don't know how people do it. And to suggest, I realize that science is very, it's unconfirmed one way or the other. I just know common sense is that if you run full speed with your head into a brick wall over and over again for 10 years, mm-hmm. you're probably going to sustain some semblance. There's going to be an impact on your body.
Exactly. Somehow, some way.
Everybody's body's different. I know that. I know the science is out sort of on all this stuff. I just, if you've ever stood on the sidelines of an NFL game and heard the contact, you will change your opinion on football as a sport. You'll just go, oh my God. Like, this is, like, go stand on a, like, I stood on the sideline of an Ohio State Alabama game.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the Sugar Bowl in 2014, not to bring up a bad memory for you guys. I remember standing on the sideline watching Derrick Henry run into Joey Bosa. And I'm just going, oh my God. Like, and this is just college. Most of those guys were never going to play in the NFL. The game was slower than it is in the NFL. And I'm just going, holy smokes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's why I'm glad my son decided not to play anymore. But, I mean.
It's why my wife's happy we had daughters.
I don't, for those who still have their kids playing, that's great. I mean, your kid got a talent and use it. And I just pray that they're safe and they don't have any long-term, health problems playing a game of football. But when my son decided not to play, I was happy. I was like, good, man, good. Because as a parent, that's the fear, is your son get hurt. It can be a freak play or a fluke play, and your son can get hurt. And it's like, man. So when he decided, I was like, great. But seriously, when I watch games, man, it's like my head immediately started hurting.
Big Finish coming up at 9:45. Coming up next, we go around the National Football League here on Morning Drive. It is Morning Drive back in here, 9:33 live on a Monday edition. The Big Finish coming up at 9:45 as we go around the National Football League. Marquise Hollywood Munson at the Wheels of Steel. What do we got this week from the league?
Yeah, it's a great privilege to coach this team and to coach the guys that I've coached throughout my career. Fortunately, I didn't play in any of those games. That's a good thing for us. But I've had a lot of good players, a lot of great players. And, they're the ones that win the games. And I've had a lot of great assistant coaches on my staff through the wins at Cleveland and certainly here. So, I was a part of those. But, honestly, the players win games in this league. And I've been fortunate. I've coached a lot of great ones.
Wow, that's the longest Bill Belichick answer I've ever gotten. But Bill Belichick wins his 300th game after beating the Browns 27-13. And it's kind of crazy watching that game and the differences of coaches, because we see how clueless Freddie Kitchens is as a coach so far in his first year.
Roll Tide.
And then we also see, you know, Bill Belichick getting that 300th win of his career. So kind of talk about basically your schedule. I'm just kidding.
What else do you say about Bill Belichick?
But yeah, just his career and then just the demise of this Browns team that, you know, quite frankly, he coached. So.
Well, he coached that team.
To a playoff spot, right?
And then they fired him. He kind of threw a funny in there. It probably went over everybody's head when he said luckily he wasn't playing. But he started his coaching tenure in 75, Baltimore Colts, 76, the Lions, through 77, then 78, Denver, 79, Giants.
We're just going to read the whole resume?
Yeah, and then he won a Super Bowl with the Giants. This is
was his best coaching.
This is how long he's been in the league. I mean, but he's only been a head coach. He started his head coach tenure in 91, and since then he's been arguably the best coach in all of football.
His defensive coordinating of the Giants against the fun and gun Kelly Bills in that Super Bowl is arguably his best performance. He's been great, obviously, for the Patriots, but that's 300 combined wins. That includes the playoffs. Only Don Shula and George Halas have more in the NFL. Again, what else do you say?
So the Cleveland Browns said Bill Belichick's not good enough. We're going to fire him. That just speaks on the Browns.
Yeah.
Typical Browns.
Although
stuff.
They were technically like
typical Browns,
they were not
stuff.
An existing franchise, right? Like they,
huh?
He was there, and then they weren't a franchise anymore, right?
Oh, because they became the Ravens.
Yeah, they came.
Right, so there wasn't a Cleveland Browns franchise. I don't believe. I don't know when he got fired.
Well, he got fired right before they went to Baltimore. He got fired right before they went to Baltimore. So he would have.
So had technically, they the Browns weren't on, a thing.
He would have been the Baltimore Ravens head coach had they kept. Then hire Mark Gibroni, I believe. To coach that team, and he went.
Would you just call me
Ted
Mark Gibroni? Yeah. And then he left there and went to the Patriots, where he coached for a year at the Patriots, and then got fired. And then he came back as a Patriot coach.
What was it? The Jets, right?
For the Jets in between. Yeah.
Golly, what a weird. Yeah. The 30 for 30 with him and Parcells is worth watching.
Yeah, because he was there with Parcells in 96.
He learned everything from Parcells.
First and goal at the 9. Quick slant, Thomas breaks one. They take him into the end zone with Peterson on his back. That is a 9-yard touchdown pass, and the Saints have captured this one.
Drew Brees returns. Drew Brees, 373 yards, passing, 3 touchdowns, and probably going to be the last we see of Teddy Bridgewater, obviously, for a while. But in that game, in that stretch that Teddy Bridgewater had to fill in for the Saints, I mean, it's honestly, you got to say that he may be the hottest free agent at quarterback this year
Did they lose a game? They had one loss with Drew Brees, right? I think Bridgewater was undefeated.
The game that they lost in that time span was the game that Drew Brees got hurt. So they count that as a Drew Brees loss because he was the starter in that game. So Teddy Bridgewater did not lose a game at all as a starter. So that has to make him pretty much the hottest
free. He's not going nowhere. They're going to pay him. They believe Drew Brees got maybe a year or two.
Taysom Hill's not the answer.
And they're going to pay him. They're going to try to pay him, let's say that. They're going to try to pay him a lot of money.
If he wants $20 million, though.
You know, to be the backup to Drew Brees.
Keeping an eye on the numbers, Drew Brees up to 525 touchdown passes in his career. Tom Brady at 530. So he is 5 behind Tom Brady. They are both within striking distance of Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning at 539. So Brady probably going to break Peyton Manning's record this year. Drew Brees will probably also break Peyton Manning's record this year, and then it's just going to be which guy can stay on the field longest will eventually have the all-time passing touchdowns record, which is insane that we were in a time where we watched 3 separate quarterbacks throw for 500 touchdown passes.
It's hard to believe that as good as Brees and Rodgers have been, that they only have 1 Super Bowl apiece. Yeah, and it makes me appreciate what Brady's done even more.
That's the unfortunate
part. Like, Drew Brees should have more than 1 Super Bowl.
That's the unfortunate part. I mean, you got
it's arguably
all about
the team and the coach.
2 of the greatest, you know, quarterbacks of all time, and Brees and Rodgers, and together they got 2 Super Bowls. Ooh. Oh, by the way, Manning has 2. himself. But I'm talking Eli Manning. Yeah. I'm not talking Peyton Manning.
You know, Steve Young only had one Super Bowl, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Brett Favre only won one Super Bowl, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. You know, I mean, it's winning a Super Bowl is really hard, which, to your point, makes
six of them even
more
impressive. But they've been to multiple Super Bowls. Those guys have been to multiple Super Bowls.
Favre went to two.
Yeah. Aaron's only been to one, and Breeze has only been to one.
Yep.
Well, Rodgers is coming up on a decade since he won it, and it's hard to believe. Brady's got six, and he went a decade between Super Bowls.
Yeah, it's crazy.
From 04 to 14.
That tells you the greatness of
Bill
the
Belichick.
New England Patriots and their machine they have. That's all it is, a machine.
You either win it or you lose it. This will be the final play of the game. Snap, hold, kick is wide left. And the Chargers have come to Chicago and beaten the Chicago Bears by a final score of 17-16.
You don't even need to narrate it. I'll take it from here. Matt Nagy is a stinking idiot because that guy took a knee with a minute left, had a chance to get more yardage, and relied on a field goal. You'd never depend on a kicker in that spot. He deserves to lose.
What was he thinking?
How can you rip on Vrabel then?
What was he thinking?
Because he ran a fake kick to his punter.
Right, I'm just saying, if we're going to count the Cody Parkey 45-yard field goal as like, well, may take the 7-point lead. This was a really short field goal. Pinheiro should have made it.
No, but it's a minute left in the game, and you can run plays.
And they still had timeouts.
Exactly. And get as close as you humanly can before trying to kick a field goal.
Now, you know Tony Dungy. Tony Dungy's a very mild-mannered guy, right?
Uh-huh.
Doesn't really ever give hot takes. Tony Dungy eviscerated Matt Nagy last night on Football Night in America. It was unbelievably good.
You just don't purposely move your team back. Like, seriously?
Well, yeah, because you take the knee and then you're going back a couple yards.
Exactly.
Now, did he do it more than once?
The field goal is pretty short, guys. He should have made the field goal.
With that much time left, you got timeouts. Run the ball up the gut or quarterback sneak. But you just don't assume that, especially with the history of the, you know, their kickers I've had the last couple of years.
Because I had the Titans on the 65 and I had the red zone on the small TV and they kept cutting into it. I saw him take one knee. Do we know if Trubisky took multiple knees?
No, he just took one
knee. It was just one?
Yeah, okay. One knee.
Still, man. Nagy, you're going to cost yourself a job, man.
This is a 41-yard
field. Oh, yeah, he definitely should make the kick.
Oh, he should have made it. I'm not saying he shouldn't have made it.
And he did call timeout.
Y'all got one job to do with kickers, and that's to kick field goals.
Yeah.
Well, everybody else working 40, their tails off.
There was 43 seconds left. They had one timeout. So they took one knee and then took a timeout and then kicked a field goal.
So that's three straight losses for the Bears, losing to the Raiders, Saints, and now the Chargers. Now next week they got the Eagles.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Eagles and Lions coming up next two games.
Watch, they're going to beat the Eagles.
I got no problem with the Bears losing football games.
I know it's been beaten to death, and Chicago fans don't want to hear it. But the fact that they took Mitch Trubisky over Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes could go down as one of the biggest mistakes in the history of drafting a quarterback.
Yeah.
Do they sign Marcus
Mariota? You only missed on one guy, you missed on two.
Do they sign Marcus Mariota in the offseason?
Somebody's going to sign him.
No, yeah, it's too windy for Marcus.
You might be right on that one, too.
His arm will look like Philip Rivers in
like
the windy zone.
God.
How do you take Mitch Trubisky over Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes?
Well, just
and you traded up to do it.
Yes.
You went up from 3 to 2.
You whiffed on two guys and you moved up to do it.
Just like
one spot.
Just like the Portland Trail Blazers not taking Michael Jordan.
Sam Bowie.
You're a big college guy. Trubisky only was a 1 year starter.
He started 1 year for North Carolina. They had a great year that year, but no one thought he was an elite player. You pop in the tape of Mahomes and Watson and you saw two of the best offenses in college football for multiple seasons. So I don't know. Deshaun Watson was a great player the second he stepped on a field in college football.
Deshaun Watson lit up Alabama in back-to-back playoff appearances.
What else do you need to know?
And you took a guy who lit up Duke. I don't know. Did he even light up Duke? I don't even know. I'm just assuming he did.
I think they went 11-1 that year, so it wasn't like they were bad.
Was that the year they made the ACC title game?
I think
game?
That's the year they made the ACC championship game and almost beat Clemson in that game.
Okay, he lit up Florida State.
Okay, there you go.
A bad FSU team. Post Jameis Winston.
I'm going to see if they even played Florida State. Yeah.
We need Mitch Trubisky's stat line, his game logs for his one and only year.
Okay.
I need to know.
I got you, dog.
Who runs the Bears? What's the GM? Is he is it Day? No.
That's the coach at the
Pace.
Buckeyes.
Pace. I think the GM for the Bears is Ryan Pace.
Okay.
What an atrocious decision.
Oh, my goodness.
I feel like I'm doing Chicago Sports Talk Radio right now.
Nah,
the Bears.
Good. Still got to make the field goal.
Dicka. Big finish next.
Heart attack.
Time for the big finish. We do it each and every day at 9:45 here on Morning Drive. And Braden Gall, the big finish brought to you by
Nashville SC, Nashville Soccer Club in the Eastern Conference semifinals after beating Charleston Battery over the weekend. They got a big one with Indy 11 coming up this weekend. And if you want tickets for the MLS inaugural season next season, NashvilleSC.com is the website. NashvilleSC.com.
And we welcome you into a Monday edition of Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
What up? What up? What up? It's a good Monday. Tamarham Monday.
Oh, jeez.
It's Tamarham. I can't say Tamarham Tuesday because typically we're just out of it. Then we're getting
well, LeBron copyrighted that. We're talking
about Tuesday. Damn it. No, he couldn't. They didn't let him copyright it.
Tamarham Tuesday is pretty good, actually.
I like Tamarham. Tamarham
It's
that
a,
sounds good.
It's a
Tamarham Monday.
What's the thought process in your fourth corner on your depth chart at the beginning of the year going up against a top seven receiver in the league?
This was a collection. This was a collective deal here. Everybody had their turn at the paddle, okay? Evans did nothing but stand in front of the room and said, Sims, Ryan.
Next.
Malcolm Butler,
next.
Line up, and I'm going to give you some shackling.
Byard?
I'm going to give each one of y'all six hits. And that's what he did. Byard, everybody. Come on, everybody get their turn.
Vaccaro.
LeSean. And it didn't matter who they chose to put on Mike Evans. He was unguardable.
I'm telling you, my blood started to boil. Like, I felt my body temperature just escalate. Now, I don't go to these practices. I don't sit through all these things like these guys do. And they, you know, well, this look showed us this, and we decided to go with that. And, you know, if they execute it, they're brilliant. If they don't get it, they're total morons. But I just don't understand the thought process yesterday. You're up 27-23. Your kicker has already made two field goals. He's 2 for 2. And I get it. Cody Parkey stinks. But on this day, he's been good. The guy hit a 51-yarder. Your running back already has multiple runs on the day where he's gashed Tampa Bay's defense. He's got 75 yards on the day, but he's also had a couple of big plays. So what do you do, like, on 4th and 1? Do you run Derrick Henry up the middle? Do you run him off tackle? You know the Bucs are going to sell out on defense, right? Mm-hmm. You can go play action, bootleg Tannehill out the back, little dump off the Firkser. He decides to run Brett Kern and almost get him decapitated.
The decision, I'm not defending the decision. Again, I wanted to make sure everybody hears me. I don't think it was the right call. The percentages of getting 4th and 2 when you line up with your offense have to be higher than when you line up and run a fake field. It was just a bad football game, I think, for the Titans. But all that matters is the win. All that matters is the W. You're 4-4. You're back in the race. You've got a chance to make a run for the playoffs. All that matters is that the defense held on 4th down when they needed to. All that matters is that the Titans offense and Ryan Tannehill went down the field and scored a game-winning touchdown when they had to. That's all that matters in the NFL. You can play terribly, and then you make one big play, and you win the game. That's what matters.
We welcome in our pal Corey Curtis from News 2.
You got a chance to go up 7 points, and that means you can't lose on a touchdown. Or if they do go for two, you get two chances to win the game by getting a stop. Mike Vrabel can be mad at me all he wants. That decision just doesn't make any sense. And I know you want to be aggressive. I know you love the call and you love the look. But you know what you love more? A 7-point lead, okay? Because your kicker should be able to hit that kick. That's why you've got him. He should be able to make that kick. You've got to trust him to make that kick. It's okay to take the points. It really is. It's okay to take the points sometimes. Whether or not a bad decision works doesn't make it a good decision. It's a bad decision when it's a bad decision, and it's a bad decision.
Late-breaking developments in the Twitter sphere. Actually, the text sphere.
Oh, no, this is private.
Yes, this was private. So Stillman sends me a text right as we go to break. He said, Tannehill played great. The idea of taking yards per attempt to say he didn't play well is ridiculous. Tannehill was legit, to which, Braden, you've got thoughts. Go after your boy.
Well, listen here, you human frat paddle. All right? Here's the deal, Stillman. If you think Ryan Tannehill was absolutely awesome yesterday, you don't know a damn thing about football. That's just the bottom line. Like, you don't know Ryan Tannehill or good quarterbacking from a jar of Vicks.
We talk some Tennessee Volunteer football as we welcome in Taylor Zarzur, SEC Network.
I'd say he's a little loose around the edges in becoming a head coach for the first time in his life. You know, he's never done this at any level of football before. So it's refreshing to have somebody that this brutally honest about everything. He is an old school smash mouth football guy. And if you told him he couldn't be a football coach anymore, I'm not sure what he would do with his life. Like, I don't mean that as a criticism, but I think that Jeremy Pruitt was born to be a football coach, and that's about it. But he's very different, because I think most of us in life are somewhat measured with our comments, depending on how much you press us on an issue we don't want to discuss. That's not the case with him.
Instead of doing what I asked him to do and just pour the shot in there, he gets the bottle, and this is a big bottle, and he just pours it in there, and he's not stopping. Like, I don't even know how many shots he poured in there, because he grabs the handle and just starts pouring it in there. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing? And he was like, man, I got to make sure it's strong. I was like, man, look, you don't need that much.
Certain people I would let have some, like, if they ask for it, I say, you know what, it's here, but put it back. Don't just leave it out for the community. Put it back. You let people drink the Tito's, man?
Yeah, I had plenty of Tito's this weekend.
I say you let people drink the Tito's.
No, nobody touches them. Much like Bart Simpson, keep your finger off my Butterfinger, You keep your mitts off my Tito's. That was the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. It's a part of your big finish each and every day here on Morning Drive at 9:45.
Yes.
Tiger Woods, by the way, win number 82 last night.
John Morant, 30
points.
Man,
what the heck did he – what tournament was that, man?
The Zozo.
What is that?
John Morant, 30 points, game-tying layup last night for Memphis. Takes his team to overtime. They win. How about that? Go Grizz.
How about those Lakers? Exactly. How about those Lakers?
Dwight Howard, 16-10.
Second best team in their own building. How's that feel, boys?
They're still the second best team in the league.
Hey, they got the same record as the Clippers, too.
Exactly.
It's because
of the Suns. How about the Warriors getting ran out of the gym the second time?
Only 79 more games to go, boys. 79 more to go.
That's it. We're done, thankfully. Darren, Donick, and Chase are coming up next. As Arenthal James Simpson once said on Twitter, I'm just saying. Take care.
Bailey DJ Nashville, I love you.
It's 10:01 a.m. on a Monday, all at once. Your sales leader needs to know which deals are at risk. Your PM wants feature adoption by cohort, and your CFO needs one last graph for the board. Now your data team has to say no to somebody. Hex changes that. Ask any data question in plain English and get an analyst-grade response, all backed by your actual business context as defined by your data team. Start saying yes to more data questions at hex.ai.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.